Now, the boys and girls in this period of middle childhood are kind of, they're about halfway between childhood. First, they were just little bitty children, you know, and then that period of childhood is a long time. Sometimes it's most too long for most of us, isn't it? If it just hurry, you know. But we have to always remember this is God's plan, this is God's child. And he has made this period to be very, very long. And they speak of early childhood, you know, later childhood, and middle childhood. I guess there are some differences, but really it's just a going on, a going on, a going on. And I think that in the growing process there are certain periods when there's certain characteristics that stand out. And I believe we are right. I don't think we'll ever know whether we have been perfectly right in the way psychologists have divided the period of childhood. But one thing that we do know is that it is a long period. And they grow very, very slowly. Now as they come into this period, having come there at their own rate, their God-given rate, the only rate they could have come in, I think that we do find some things that they have in common. Although there are many different patterns. I can't talk about everything. I'd like to help you to be happy with your children, but in spite of the many different patterns that you have in your homes, I think they have some things in common, so those we'll try to talk a little bit about. And maybe we can give you some encouragement. Now, some women ask 800 juniors what they like to do most. And that's what I'm going to take from my outline. It just came to me. The Lord gave me this, I know. The thing that got the most, the activity that got the most votes, I think you could guess. Would you want to try? What do you suppose juniors like to do best of all? No, they didn't say that first. Play. Play. Isn't that what you might expect? Because that's the activity God gives a child of, isn't it? Play. And we never want to depreciate the value of play. I think it's far more wonderful than we have any idea of what it doesn't do for the child. If God hadn't given them that great desire, I don't believe that they could ever develop from what we would anticipate or expect of them. So this, I think, shows up the child physically. Now, they say that at this period, he is in his greatest health that you can ever anticipate. That is, there are the least deaths at the age of 10. Now, doesn't that tell us something about maybe why they like to play so well? Because they can do it. And their play is a little different, haven't you noticed? One mother told me this, and I just got this lately. She said, my 10-year-old doesn't talk, he shouts. He doesn't smile, he howls with laughter. And he doesn't walk if he can run. Isn't that about true? And he doesn't run if he can dash and jump. So it shows up, I think, very much in the physical. That almost is one of the first things that comes to your mind, isn't it, when you think of this middle period. Well, now, if that is the safest year of life, doesn't that show that he's at a peak here physically, and that's probably why he can play, and he's got the vigor and the energy, you see, and that's why he does this. Now, don't blame God if you wish you could suppress some of this and wish you didn't have it. No, he has to have this. He has to have lots of energy. That's because he is in health, and I think because God wants him to be in health. Now, he will be mischievous, don't you see, if he can't be directed a little bit. And it's a certain kind of mischief here that we notice. It's this jumpy kind, I think, that it just doesn't fit in our programs always, does it? And that's why we just wonder that it has to be. I believe at this period, with this energy, he likes to go out into things. I believe that's what pushes him out, and to explore and to dare. And now I like the verb that Jesus gave when the children came to him. Remember, the men wanted to push him away, push the children away. But Jesus said, let them come. Let. Now, can we let them use this energy, see? Can we let them explore? Can we let them go out and dare and let them do things? Use up this energy. Well, you know what troubles you have if you don't let. And yet, we just don't like to let. Especially if it interferes with our housekeeping or with our program. I think that this is the time when they are doers, not sitters. And not just hearers either. Not just listeners. Now, I think it's very valuable to bring up a junior child to this period that has a good listening ear. And I believe that's possible. I don't believe that juniors have to be always themselves going forward and doing things and meaning that they can't ever listen. Because I think to train a listening ear, that's a big subject in itself. Just to train a child to listen. But at this period, they're not just hearers. Now, you see, they have too much energy. I think we just have to take them as they are. They just can't sit still, and they just can't listen. I remember one time when I reproved, whatever you would call it, and the word shouldn't have to be used of me. I reproved my daughter in church for her activity. And she said, "Well, Mother, I'm listening all the time." And I thought, "Now, I'll be just checking that when you get home, though, just indirectly." And she heard. She heard some things I didn't even hear. I believe at this period, the reason they have so much exuberance and support, I believe that God gives them this inner energy and this life, and they just feel it is just grand to be alive. Now, a little later, some problems are going to come in, and they have some little questions, you know, wonderments about themselves. But at this period, they're just perfectly happy. They can be. It's just full of life. It's grand to be alive. I wish they could always feel that way. And I believe they can, not just in the same sense with this physical push inside of them, but I think if we can nurture them all through adolescence, they can feel it's grand to be an adolescent, even though it's rough times. But they will enjoy hard things. At this time, I think with all this physical health, they have a capacity for doing some things, for motor skills particularly, you know, for using their hands and their muscles and their bodies. Now, their turning about shows that they have muscular ability, and, you know, they develop muscular skills, just the kind of leaps and things they can make. They just couldn't always do that, couldn't handle themselves that well. So they have this power to act, and I think if it's directed, it can be a very good power. It's God's growing child in action on his journey in life. Now, mentally, I think he's quite energetic, too. This is the second thing that second activity the children said they like to do. Read. That was their second. That's the one that got second place. Now, I believe that's one reason is here that they like to read so well is because they are mentally energetic. Isn't the physical related to the mental? You know, when your child is not physically well, then doesn't he seem to have some little problems to be happy in his mind, I mean, in any social life, even to his mother sometimes? It is not quite the same relationship, it seems. Well, I think he has a little problem there. But when he is strong physically, he has some mental energy, too, that he can put forth. This is the time to let them adventure forth in books. This happens to be a good subject for me because that's one of my pet subjects, that we ought to give the children books. Reading is thinking. And at this period, with his backlog of learning to read, you see, in these first years he just had to learn the skills of reading. But now, say, he can do it. And he's got lots of energy and lots of mental energy, so he ought to be privileged to go forth into books. I think that books can take him a lot of times jumping and skipping into things, you know, take him into adventures, and he can just even use some of his physical energy going into these realms of thought. Now, this adventure must be directed because it must be good. You mentioned the comic books. I have to tell you, I met a boy that he had excellent books in his reading, and I was just wondering so much about... I saw a few comics around. I didn't see many. I just wondered, but I didn't want to ask. But then after a while, he showed me one of these comic books and commented very unfavorably on it. And then I said, you have some comic books? Oh, I guess I have 200 anyhow. And he said, would you like to see? Well, I said, I just couldn't now. But I said, maybe sometime you'd like to show me some of these comic books. He says, I'll go all through them and I'll pick some out and show them to you. And then when he brought me about five or six, He says I couldn't hardly find any to think you'd be interested in. He's awfully no, he says they're not much good. He says, really, there's not much in any of them. He went on and talked about these books. I'm far better, you see, for him to say it than for me to say it. And, of course, I wondered. I don't know all the comic books at all. I don't know very much about them. And, you see, he had been adventuring into good literature, and the comics just took their place. I suppose every child will find some comics, won't they? But if we, I think what we can do is direct them into the good literature. Give them the good literature, develop good taste from childhood up, and the others, even though he'll meet them, he's bound to meet them in the world. And is there any woman here that doesn't read any comic strip? You don't read any. There's one very soul. Now, Matt Price, it would be too dangerous for us to read very much. I think one way that we can help our children against the evil is always to strengthen them in the good. Now, I know the power of evil is great. I know Satan is powerful, but is he as powerful as God? We must always believe and have confidence, I believe, in the truth of God and in the power of the truth. You say you don't want your child to read an evil book. Why not? Because you know it's going to work out in his life, isn't it? He's going to do something bad. When I work the good by the same route through his mind, in his life and heart, work out for the good. If we're afraid, I think it must be because we don't have enough confidence in the truth of God and that we can give it. And perhaps it is harder to find. Isn't that true? The cheaper the things on the evil side are so, and they're presented too in such striking manners and there's so much color and attractiveness that we must watch as we present the good literature. Anything that comes from the church and in the name of Christ, I believe, must be very good, very attractive. The best of art and the best of literature. Don't give cheap literature to your children, especially in the name of Christ and the church. One characteristic, a mental characteristic they have, I think, is that of curiosity. Now, that, I suppose, has made you trouble. They want to know too many things. They want to tell too many things apart, and they want to do too much exploring. But that is a God-given trait that you don't want to let them lose. Let them keep it alive. Let them have privilege to explore. God's world of nature is a great place to explore. And it's a rich place, and it's a pure place. And I think there we can let them exercise much of their experimenting, their exploring, and their discovering, and let them, but we will have to probably give them some help, especially in arranging environments. And nature books is one, I think, one thing you can arrange to help them to go out into God's world, where they will not find all the impurities and the things that they find in man's world, where man has done too much to disturb. If you are teaching in the Sunday school class or in any kind of work with children in the Bible, I believe that we must take the same approach there. We must remember that they have a lot of mental energy and they don't want to sit there and just listen to us old women talk at them. Or even tell them what the Bible says. I think it's much better to prepare carefully questions and things and let them explore. Let them go in. They've got lots of mental energy. They can find it. And if they find it, I believe they take a different attitude toward it than if I just say it to them. Because they see that God says this. I was just thrilled when my little grandchild came to me. He was just three. And he brought his Bible and he said, Grandma, I can read the Bible. That's what he says. I can read the Bible. And he says, right here's what God says to me. And then he had a little thing, I put a number in it, like he has in my Bible. So it was one like this. And then he read the verse. Now, of course, he wasn't reading. But he knew what the verse said, reading the picture. Now, I thought, oh, I hope he will always keep that attitude. Here's what God says to me. Now, I think we have to work for that as we go up through the years, that this Bible is still the source of God speaking to them. God speaking to them. These little things were in the course of study, and the teacher had put this in for him, you see, with the verse, and that was why he could read it. But what I liked so much was the wholesome attitude that he had toward the Word. I hope he can keep that. So let's not over-supervise their learning, because they have lots of energy. And let's plan for them to go in and explore the things of God, and not only in the Bible, but I'm thinking particularly in the Bible. You know, when they're little tots, they say, me do, me do. Well, now, me can do it well. Now let me do it. Let me do it. But I remember when I was in the grades, we had great big geographies. Maybe you had some of those in the, some of the older ones anyhow. Oh, they were quite large. And when the teacher would give the little children something to do, I would like to do too, because now I could so well, you know. I'd stand this big geography up and then I'd do it behind here. I suppose I was ashamed maybe the rest of them see, or the teacher didn't want the teacher to see. But I could then. Now let's let them when they can. That's the... I think God has made them that they must have these privileges now because they have all this energy. Now this is a time in the middle grades here when they begin to go into history and geography. See, the schools now give them history and geography. They don't give them much historical sequence before this because they don't think mentally they're ready for it. They can't appreciate that one thing causes another to happen. And then that situation won't be perfect either, and then something else will happen. And so history goes on. History evolves that way, and things happen because of what the situations were. I think that is very healthy for their spiritual advancement, too. Even in their own lives. You see, they're getting smart enough now, they're beginning to look in and interpret their own lives and understand. And they can see their responses, that they're making responses to their past situations. And they're making responses to their past situations. Maybe it's getting them all ready against the day when they're going to respond. Take one way or the other. They feel they must take one way or the other. This is a time of collections, they say. This is a time when they like to amass things, bring things together. Here, I believe, again, you have an opportunity. Direct them into wholesome hobbies. We can't dictate hobbies, but I believe we can range the scene. We can have them visit certain people that have certain hobbies, or we have little hobbies, shows in connection with our religious education some way, so that they can maybe see something that they might think that would just be something they would like to explore, they would like to do. And you can give them wholesome hobbies that can go with them all through life. So you can help the life a lot. I'll never be thankful enough that people started our son on the hobby of railroads. Well, when he was in college, I learned this afterwards. He didn't tell us. He told us very little about his college days. I guess that was all right. But he would do things he would do, you know. He even sing solos, and maybe the chief soloist in an oratorio or something, you know. And we never heard about it. Never even told us. Someone else would come around afterwards and tell us. Well, he was helped into that. And when he was in college, I remember he said that he used to go up to Chicago or some places to visit an industry, you know, and then after that, someone would go over to the shows or something. He said, Mother, I just took the opportunity and went to the railroad station. There he would watch and learn a lot of things that he was still interested in his college days. Well, he still carries his missionary. He's still much interested in railroads. We found we just visiting with him lately. So those hobbies, I think, can be very wholesome. And this is a time when he can, since he likes to do things so well, he could go out in service projects. He's mentally able to plan things for people and to do things for people. Now, maybe we can turn a lot of his energy into that, and he will turn him away from himself out to others. That, I believe, is always one problem we must think carefully about. How can we turn our children out of themselves to others? Well, while your little baby had to be kind of turned into himself, didn't he? But then he must begin very surely on this journey of going out of himself to others. And it's a long journey. It's a long journey to get completely out of self. And someday that he will just be, see his full need, that he can't do anything in himself in a sense. And then he has privilege to accept the great Savior who can deliver him and can help him. And I think even at that period he can get a good relationship to himself, especially a good relationship to himself. In the third place, these children said that the activity they liked was making things. First was play, then reading, and then making things. Now, I think I've really touched upon that a little already, isn't it? They have these abilities, this power to, they have the skill. Their body had developed to that point. Now, I suppose if we'd take time to go around here, we could find what your children in this middle period like to make. It's annoying sometimes, and a nuisance. all the stuff around the house, you know. And our houses are small. We have no place for the child, for his making. And yet we know we don't want to push him out. We don't want to push him away from the home. Yeah, I think it's a very important age to be careful that we don't let him go too far and push him out because we don't make provision for his abundance of activity. He can use his motor skills now, and he should have privilege to use them. Just one little illustration I might give here from observation. I think I observed quite closely one boy who worked too much on one thing. He put together airplanes, and he put together airplanes, and his grandpa would get him another airplane to put together, and then someone would get him another airplane to put together, and another airplane to put together. Now, maybe it might be something else instead of airplanes, but illustrating this point, it seemed to me that all the people were just feeding him to narrow his motor skills very much. I believe that this is a time when you could direct your children into many lines, so let him have a diversity of experience. Not just feed one little line of activity. We may have to provide the materials at this time. Now, this becomes a little costly when you have to provide good tools. But I often wonder if we ought to give the children such poor tools down, such poor scissors, for instance, down in the kindergarten. They can't cut, and then I try to cut with them, and I can't either. Now, how could they if I can't? And I think it's a little expensive, isn't it, to give the children some tools. But I believe that this is what we must consider. And the materials, now this comes to our pocketbooks. I don't think the children have to have always the most costly materials or costly tools, but they must be workable. So they don't fail, see, so they can achieve. Because success is very important, I believe, in this age, as it is in any age. And then the place. Now, perhaps that's the least expensive, but it's the hardest to give. Must you give part of your living room? Well, you can't give your part of your living room to a shop. Activities, can you? Any kind? Well, what's the living room for? For the visitors? Or is it to live in? If it's just for visitors, it's probably what in me that's keeping this room in such condition. Pride. Let's not be afraid to face it. Pride. I want to be well thought of. I don't want to have any disturbance. I'd like to visit the woman who has practically no apologies no matter what the house is like. There's many ways to keep house. I'm convinced of that at my age. I didn't always believe that so well. But many ways, and I meet fine women in a lot of different housekeeping situations. I met many fine women in the most different kinds of kitchens in South America. You just wouldn't know what to do in some of those kitchens. But you would soon be happy, I think, if you lived there, too. The next thing that the children put on there in order was go places. Go places. Now, I don't believe any in particular. They just want to run away from home. But don't you believe with all this energy they have, and their many exploration abilities, you know, that they... And they're reaching out, you see, that they just like to explore places, too. They have this historical sense and this geography sense. I think a child is a whole, and we have to put him all together when he asks for certain requests and see why he asks for that. And so I think he should be permitted to go places, of course. And then, again, we have to have... it takes a lot of wisdom, doesn't it, too? And a lot of letting. Awful hard to let them... To let them go. I think one thing that is in this very definitely is that they are becoming more and more and more and more independent. That is, if we've been letting them. And they're just naturally, everybody's got his meeting. Now they just like to break away a little from the constraints, you see. A little more away. And they can. I guess we have to ask, shouldn't they? Shouldn't they be permitted to just go a little farther than those first 3 years of school children could, you know? The first 3 grades. These are the next 3 grades now. Now, they will want to be a person in their own right. Now, that's God-given. And I don't believe that you and I are going to be afraid to let them go a little if we have done good nurture thus far. But if we fail thus far, then we're afraid. Then we're just awfully afraid in this period, this pre-adolescent period, you know, and they're going to go into adolescence, and we're just too afraid to let them go. You know, at six, in the sixth grade, they usually call them smarty. Some of you, perhaps your children have called others smarty, or they have been called smarty. Sometimes it hurts even. Now, I think it I think it's just natural for children here to act a little on the smarty side. Because they can. They just are a little smart now. And maybe they kind of come to consciousness that they are a little smart. They can do things. Oh, I couldn't do that. And my little brother, oh, he said, it's just not near smart, you know. Just because they have it in them and can, I think that just kind of sets them off a little. I don't believe it is all bad to feel that they are a little smart at his age. I think it's just kind of natural. It symbolizes of what is happening in the individual. Socially, at this time, they go to group games. You understand that. And I think they do some working together. But you know how they fuss when they play games at first? Say, baseball, for instance. Such a fussing. It just continuously, every time almost, every inning, there's something wrong. It's wrong with the pitcher or the umpire or something. They just fuss and fuss. But isn't that because they're just learning to work together? They're just learning. Some of us never do get it learned. They're just learning. Now, we must appreciate that all these stages are developing, growing stages. And give them time to learn. My daughter just told me the other day, she said, Mother, she said, I was just startled the way the boys played baseball. There's an open court near their house where they play. She said, well, I don't think I heard one bit of fussing today. She said, I was just shocked. They're just getting a little older now, and now they're learning to cooperate better. Now, I believe they have to have time to learn it. It's the time when we have to be a little careful about dictating, especially about any criticism on their lack of working together. Don't you know you ought? And don't make such a... Don't be all the time fighting. Don't you ever say expressions like that? Now play together nicely. Probably you said that before this age, even. One problem we have at this time is the gang, isn't it? I'm not sure whether we get all of this from... all this is quite Christian, or whether the world has arranged the situation so that the gang is present. I just never could quite solve that. Whether they really need the gang as much as the world says or not. I'm just not quite sure on that. And just with one illustration, it doesn't prove anything. Our son was never too much to go into gangs. And that's what disturbed me, you know. I thought this was the gang theory. This was the one they had to have some kind of a little secret gang, and they had to have a secret motto and so forth, you know, and some secret purposes, and they had to do things together. Now, I can see some values in it, but you all know the dangers, don't you? Especially when our children live in a non-Christian environment. I don't believe it. I would come forth and say this is a demand. And anyhow, if you can have group activities in your church and in your Christian schools, I think they can meet some of those needs if the children have those needs to be together, which I kind of feel they do have some. I think they're learning something there, you know, learning to give in to each other, learning to work together. And one's a leader, but you know, next day he may be knocked out, and then another will be put in for a leader. And it's tough, it's rough, and I believe that's kind of good for them. Getting them ready for something, I think, in adolescence that maybe is pretty important. At this age, they hate the girls socially, so we don't have so much trouble there. At 10, Gassell says that sex differences are pronounced. This is the height. They'll never be so pronounced hereafter. So let's not push them at all. Let's just let them hate the girls. They really don't hate the girls, do they? Just like to hear themselves talk. But these sex differences are standing out now because he's coming into his sexual life, isn't he? And she's coming into hers, too. But, you know, they don't hate the boys quite as much as the boys hate the girls. But God is doing something in his body, you see, that I believe is just a foundation for this. He's coming into his own, into manhood. He's starting, at least, on the way. And then he thinks that these girls. I believe we should be very careful about teasing boys and girls. I believe much of that is done in homes. And I think it is not good at all to tease boys and girls. To tease it even about hating the boys and girls. I mean about their hating the girls. Or to tease the girls anything about the boys. Now, in our school systems, they're already at this young age thinking too much, aren't they? And soon they're going to be dating, and we know that this is not healthy. Well, let's us not irritate it, or in any way at all, or not feed it, you know, in any way at all. So we can keep them just as pure as they possibly can be kept. I think this time they are, since they are sexual conscious, you see, the boy is coming. He's not coming as fast as the girl. The girl, you know, with her breasts and all is beginning. She's beginning her breasts. She's going to come into menstruation sooner or later. And you see, she's very definitely something happening there. She's on her way. And as her body develops, she becomes sex conscious. She can't help it. Because this is the big thing that God is giving her at this age. This new power within her. And this new awakening. Now, I wonder if the best thing we can do is not to have some good, I'd emphasize the good literature where they can find it. One man said that he read Into Manhood with his boy. Then they were both, the son knew, you know, what, and he knew that these facts, and he knew his father knew them too, and it was just a togetherness, you see, and a thinking together, and the son came and talked to him. He said he's sure the son would never have come and talked to him about those things if they hadn't read this book together. Into Manhood, that's a very good one, I believe, in this age now, just as they say about 11. Why dare we not wait too long? Because the world gives it, don't they, every side. And if we want to keep it pure, we must be very much awake. I mean, not to overdo it, but just to give a good, pure picture. I think that when we bring Susie's babies here. Oh, my. Susie's babies is a very good, I won't have time to comment upon it. It's a school teacher that does it in school. With hamsters. That's the way she always tells the story of life. She throws it around as something very good. I will have to hurry. Emotionally, this is a very important age, as every age is. And one thing I would like to say, whatever emotions they display at this time, accept them. Don't try to push them down and push them into their life. Be sure to accept the children. Let them talk about their troubles. Let them talk about their fears. If they get cross, well, just let them talk about it. Let them out with it, you see. The more we try to push down in and scold and say, now you know that isn't right. Now if you get angry like that again, I'm going to do so and so. Well, that doesn't help over the anger. The way to get the least troublesome, no doubt, is to let them say it, say you understand why. Or just a simple illustration, friends, here comes a child with a hurt. This we do down the lower ages. And you can't see anything at all. But she says it hurts. No, now, it doesn't hurt. Now stop crying. Now, does that help them? It just makes it worse, doesn't it? You say, well, I'm just sure that hurts. Mommy will do. Well, maybe all you need to do is kiss it, isn't it? And then it's all over. See, to accept the feelings, even though you doubt some of them. It was some kind of hurt, you were sure of that. That is gets you much farther than to blame, accuse, or in any way make any unkind remarks, as if it is not genuine. I will go on because I want to talk a bit about the spiritual. Now, I believe that if all these others that the children mention, these things they like to do, I believe those are God-given likes. And I believe they're in the children, and I believe we must meet them. It's God's child, and the growth and all these things that are in the child are right. God never made a mistake in making a child, and he didn't make any mistake in the laws of growth. They're all right and good. Now, the problem is the sin, isn't it, that came through Adam's fall. They can use any of these powers to sin, can't they? And that's in the spirit, you see. Now, that's the genuine, that's in our purpose so fully, isn't it, that we don't want them to use these powers. Sin, friends, doesn't it give you many, many moments of awakeness that they would go in pure ways as far as their sexual life is concerned? That's a great burden, isn't it? Because you know the temptations that will be around them. And they can use. There's nothing wrong with the sexual powers that God has given them at all. Nothing wrong to be a boy. Nothing in any part of that boy. His penis or anything, there's nothing wrong there in any part of it. But it can be so easily used for wrong. Used for wrong uses. And he can begin to think so impurely about it, can't he? And all those things are They are disturbing to us, and they are burdens for us. Spiritually, they tell us that this aged child has one great help, if we will use it, and that is that he begins kind of to worship heroes. That I think it's because he's building up his man concept now. He's beginning, you see, to look, he's growing, he feels he is, and maybe because he has that sexual urge inside of him, why, he knows that he's going toward manhood, and he begins to look to men. Now, can we furnish good men for him to look at? Abby, that's one of the things we can do and should do. Having neat, fine young men, not particularly older men, I think he'll embody and get his ideals more from a little younger men. Bring the young men, fine young men, into your home. Don't think that he has to go everywhere to meet these young men, too much away from home. Having meet many fine young men, maybe you can have some fine young men take him out on some nature hikes. If you can have fine young men enter into your children's physical activities, well, you have a double function there. You see, while they are playing, they can also be working. I spoke last night about living in the family. This may be all you women out here. I believe I'll have to admit that if I want to give a little answer to the particular question Mrs. Rice said, which I think is very pertinent. It's a very important question, too. If my children go to play with non-Christian children, what? Will they become contaminated? Is it dangerous? But these are my neighbors. I must testify before these people. Can I so live before these people that we can't be contaminated? Can we so live that our children can't be contaminated? Mother just gave me this. She said that her little girl came in from playing with another little girl who used bad language. And this little girl came in and said, Mommy, I used some bad words. Well, you didn't want to. No, the little girl said herself, I'm going in the other room. The mother had a guest at the time. I'm going in the other room and pray. And ask Jesus to help me. Well, ask him to forgive me. That was the first thing she said. She went in. She came out. Thinks it'll be all right. She goes out to play. And it was not so very long before she came back again. She said, Mommy, I said a bad word. And she was real broken up about it this time. But she said, I'm going in and I'm going to pray. Well, forgive her. She said, more or better or what. But she went in and she came out. She says, I think it'll be all right now, Mommy. And as far as the mother could find out, it was all right. Now, I think that's kind of about the only way we can solve this problem is to lay good foundation, rightly relate the children to God and to Christ, to know the source of power that they have in Him, to be happy about His power, to be happy about His interest in children, you know, and what He can do for children and what He will do for children. If we can nurture them from little up to come to this period when they have so many troubles with the outside world, I believe that if they have been happy in the godly way of life, that they will have some strength to stand. And especially if they are happy anywhere at school or anywhere to just breathe a prayer to God and get help. He's ever there. I met a fine mother. She said that one morning as they always stood on the threshold when they went to go to school hall and to say their goodbyes, they all stood there together. Wonderful, I thought. The mothers would take time. One goes up, one goes that way. And soon they're all gone, but they don't meet together. Well, she said one morning one of the boys said he had a certain hard problem at school, and could they pray? Certainly. She said ever since, every morning they meet in the threshold and they pray. And what the children tell her about their little problems and things they're going to have. And then she asked two for prayers. And then she said, while they're gone, she said, it's just the sweetest fellowship. She said, I'm looking to God for these children, you know, that are over there in this hard situation, and they are praying for me. But I thought that was good. Encourage them to look to the one who can help, particularly because he's interested in children's problems. I believe that attitude of God toward children is something we want to build up and be so strengthening. We don't want to keep house plants, do we? We don't want to raise them. You know, your children will get out in the world, and they will meet the world. And I think we should arrange that situations are not too hard. I certainly believe that we can help our children. But you strengthen your children in God and strengthen them in their relationships to others that they appreciate any boy or girl, no matter how dirty or what color or anything. And I believe that you have some power there that will help your children when they must go apart from their more purely Christian environment into other environments. I have talked over time. I wish you might be wise to handle this age. It is so important. I think if we do a very good job here, our job will be much easier in the next period. I think that's true every period. That the success of the next period always depends upon the success that we have here. So let them be juniors. Let them be what God has made them to be. But at the same time, arrange for their activities, you know, in a Christian locale, in a Christian environment, and with a Christian approach. I think much of this has to be done in the background. We don't tell the children our purposes, but we do it. May God make you real good mothers of your middle-aged children.